what I got, Larry, from George Farms out of Texas. We got some garlic, dill,
George pickles. Farms.
George Farms. Ain't them pretty?
They are. You tried one yet?
Nope, but we're fixing to.
Fresh little clover.
Garlic.
Garlic right on top then.
Garlic, dill, pickles. Here you go.
I'm going to put that garlic back in there.
I don't know that I've ever had garlic, dill, pickles.
Those are good. You can definitely taste the garlic and the dill on them. It kind of pops in your mouth there, but it's really, really good.
You know, a lot of people don't like garlic. I happen to be one that do like garlic.
Those are good right there. Got a nice crunch still to them.
Wow, that is powerful.
Yeah. It'll jump out at you, but if you like garlic and you like dill, it's good.
It is good. It's different, but it's good. Well, thank you for sending them to us.
Yeah. So who sent those? You remember who it was?
George Farms out of Texas. I think the name's guy's name was either George James or James George.
Those are good right there.
Yep.
If you don't mind, you know, put your in the comments or section. A lot of people always ask for a recipe. If you got a recipe there, put it in the comments, and that way everybody can see it.
Yeah, I definitely like. We'll see if we can't get a hold of that and
try that right there. Yeah.
That's good stuff.
We'll have some garlic, and we've got dill seed. We can grow some dill. We can give that a try. A lot of nice little sticker on it too.
Yep. Also, some jambalaya okra.
Oh, he sent
some of
too?
That too. Jambalaya okra pickled. Jambalaya okra.
He got some garlic in there as well. Mm-hmm.
He like me. He likes garlic.
That's on point right there. I could eat that whole jar.
That is good.
That is good stuff.
Some cheese and crackers.
Mm-hmm. What you talking about? I got to pickle me some for my okra quits making.
That's nice. Nice size okra right there, just right for pickle.
Yep, just right. Those are fancy.
Fancies.
Thank you for sending us the pickles and the okra there.
Heck yeah.
George Farms. And let's say hey to everybody before we get any deeper. Hello and welcome to the Row by Row Garden Show. I'm Travis.
And I'm Greg.
And we're really good, really glad.
Man, that garlic's got you all messed up.
We're really glad to have you with us on the show tonight. We got a really good show planned. We're going to do some rapid fire Q&A, try to get caught up on all these questions we've been asked on previous shows in the comments section. And as always, if you have any questions or comments during the show, please share those with us. We read all those and we like to respond to them and just to hear your thoughts. Around here, it has been hot and it has been dry.
Dry and hot.
We last week, we got a little bit of a break from it. We stayed under 90 for most of the week. This week, it's the temperature range during the day is absolutely crazy. This morning, my truck said 65 degrees. And yesterday when I went home, my truck said 97 degrees. So we got a 30 degree swing during the day right now, which is, I mean, the plants just don't know what to do with that.
Yeah, we're talking about, for the end of this week, high 90s, maybe touch 100, so. And we ain't had no rain in a while, and there's none in the forecast, so it's
and over a month.
It's tough.
And I'm just waiting on my well to run dry, because I've been having to overhead water a lot.
Yeah, we need some rain in the worst way.
Even okra is struggling. Across the road here, there's few hundred acres or so of cabbage, and they've been having to water it once or twice a day with the pivot just to keep it going. I've got cauliflower and cabbage and rutabaga transplants in the greenhouse that are ready to go in the ground, but I just can't make myself plant them right now.
So I planted my onion bed this week. I planted my sweet harvest onions in the bed. I'm gonna grow me some plants and made me some nice little 30 inch beds. Direct seeded them, planted them thick in there. I got the water running on them as we speak, having to water them once or twice a day, easily. Maybe a little bit more, try to get those seeds germinated, get them up. Never grown onions in beds like that before, but we've grown other things just like that, so it shouldn't be a problem.
It'll be interesting to see how that turns out if you can keep your weed pressure down.
I got a little, I think I got that under control. I'll let you, I'll I'll fill you in later on that one.
All right. I got some onion transplants going. Some I started earlier that are looking pretty good. I just started some more last week, some Texas Legend, which we're working on getting on the site, and some more leeks. I did a video on Wednesday showing my pole beans just didn't make it, rust all over them. Mm-hmm. But I got cucumbers looking really good. We're going to have some cucumber harvest here pretty soon, maybe making some of those pickles. And then one other thing I want to talk about that I meant to mention in my corn healing video that came out on Tuesday. Go check that out if you haven't seen it. I was showing where I had some, you know, corn's only 18 inches or so tall, but you can tell when you get some early worm damage there. And you definitely want to nip that in the bud before you get ears forming. And if you don't nip it in the bud, I have seen this happen in the past. What can happen is before you even get ears forming, them worms, they'll gnaw the tassels off of it. And if they gnaw that tassel off, you ain't getting any pollination.
They hungry this time of year.
They are hungry. And white flies are hungry too.
Yeah.
Been using a little hort oil on the white flies, try to keep those down.
Cabbage and cauliflower, transplants.
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning earlier. I've got those ready to go, but I gotta get me a load of compost.
They're gonna be ready to come out of the greenhouse shortly, so we're gonna have to have a break in this weather to get them in the ground.
Yeah, and several other things I've been wanting to plant, holding off on, kind of waiting. Hopefully after this little spell we get some rain, and I really like things to be under 90 during the day before I start putting a lot of fall stuff.
So we got a new product here I want to talk about in just a minute.
All right.
We got a product that's 3.5 pounds of organic fertilizer. Now what brought this on was, just like this week, I had a guy come in here doing do some computer work for us. Mm-hmm. And he got back there in the back and got me cornered up and started talking about 256 patch pounds and this, that, and other, and kept on and asked me what I wanted to do. Well, I disagreed with him and went on, and eventually what I thought to myself is, I want him to fix my computer system where nobody come there hollering at me because their computer don't work. I don't want to know about 246 patch panels and all that kind of stuff. I don't care. Okay. And I got to thinking, you know, a lot of people out there might not care that much like we do about fertilizers and trying to figure everything out. So I come up with this simple product right here. If you don't want to understand a lot about fertilizer, or if you're new to gardening, this is, I hate to say idiot proof, this will get you by when you don't know what you're doing. An organic fertilizer, 543, and this is hen composted manure. Now there's a difference in regular chicken composted manure, and hen composted manure has a lot more calcium in it. So we got this product here that's a 543. So
basically a balanced fertilizer.
A balanced organic fertilizer. So people with raised beds and things like this getting new to gardening can take this and put it in their garden area, raised beds, pre-plant, cover it up, and come back and side dress one more time with the addition of some micro boost. That's all they need to make a dead gum garden.
So this is practically the organic version of our 2020 for the smaller scale gardener. It is OMRI registered, and then the rate on this is really simple. 1.5 cups per 10 square feet pre-plant, and then half that rate 4 to 6 weeks after planting. And we've got the directions on there. Really simple stuff, really good stuff.
It's a lot, it's not as easy to burn your plants with this as it is in synthetic fertilizer. So it's a lot more forgiving, and it pretty much packs everything you need with exception. You still need to put your little micro boost on there every couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. So if you got a raised bed or a container garden, put some of that down pre-plant, take your trowel or a little fork and just mix it in the soil, and it should help those plants out.
Yeah,
a lot.
Come back after that one time, side dress it, and I think you'll be good. One more thing. Organic fertilizers release a little bit different than synthetics do. Most time with synthetic fertilizers, you'll see a bump where they release after you put them out, especially if they're soluble. These organic fertilizers go through there and you'll see a bump, then they come back down and they level out with their release and they'll bump again at the end. So it's a more constant, slower release for the plants than synthetic fertilizers are.
Right. One more thing I want to show everybody. Grab that over there. So. We've been selling the fire out of these seed trays here since we started carrying them.
Yep.
But a lot of people a lot of our fans and customers don't have a greenhouse like that we do, and they want to grow them inside.
Yep.
And they're used to the 10-20 trays where you can buy a bottom tray for them. So we have looked and looked and looked, and we found a company in England that actually makes a bottom tray.
Now this
for
is a
the,
nice heavy duty bottom
yeah,
tray.
This is as heavy duty as this is, so similar quality. And lean it down there. I'll show you how it fits in there. So it fits. You got a little bit of wiggle room on the sides, but it fits in there really, really nicely, really heavy duty. So we got these on a cargo ship. They're on the way. Don't know how long it takes a boat to get from England to South Georgia, but
it takes a little bit.
It's going to take a little bit. But as soon as we get them, we'll get those on the site. And those of you who grow indoors can have those bottom trays there so you can catch the water and you can water them from the bottom.
Did a lot of research on those things trying to find them because we was really curious about the quality. We knew we didn't want to sell no flimsy bottom tray with no heavy duty seed trays. So we found one that we thought was compatible, and there we go.
And it's going to last you a lifetime just like the tray will. So stay tuned for that. I know a lot of people are going to be excited about that. All right, so this week, actually, well, I keep getting... One more thing I want to mention. I've had a lot of people asking me, since we haven't had any rain, a lot of people been asking me, how do I know how long to run this drip to get so much? You know, people know, well, if I got an inch or two of rain this week, my plants are good. But since we haven't had any rain, people are asking, how long do I need to run my drip to get an inch of rain or the equivalent? So,
here we go with Q-cord.
We went over this before. I want to just break it down one more time, kind of remind everybody. So I kept it pretty simple here. I didn't include my math. You can check me if you want to. So 1 inch of rain, hold it for me. Yeah. 1 inch of rain on an acre is the equivalent of 27,000 gallons of water. Okay. Do the math on that. That means 1 inch on a square foot of ground is 0.62 gallons of water, a little over half a gallon. Our emitters on the drip tape, which are every 12 inches, every emitter is going to put out 0.004 gallons per minute. That's what each emitter outputs. And then you do the math, the time to get 0.62 gallons at this rate is going to be 2.5 hours. So you run your drip tape 2.5 hours, that's going to give you the equivalent of an inch of rain.
That's pretty impressive.
So
took you a minute to figure that one out, didn't it?
Now that as hot and dry as it's been, I've noticed the ground moisture, that drip works good. Nothing like a good rain to get that ground moisture restored.
Yep.
All right, so what we're going to do this week, we've got 12 questions. We're going to jump through a lot of them from previous shows that we didn't get to address on the show, and then at the end we're going to draw one of the names, one of the numbers, and somebody's going to get a nice new Hoss hat. So let's jump into them here. Our first question is from Mary Sewell, and she says, when do we plant our sweet Vidalia onions, Greg?
So I'm assuming Mary's in similar location than what
she's talking about Vidalia onions, right?
Yeah, so she's talking about Vidalia onions. If you plant seed, I would plant them now, because I just planted mine this week. And grow them out. If you're doing transplants, you can plant anywhere, anytime in November. Normally around the 15th, anywhere 1st, 15th, whenever you get, I think you'll be out anytime during the month of November to plant your transplants. Plant your seeds now, plant your sets or your transplants in November. If you live in a little different zone than we do, you can move that 2 weeks either way and kind of 2 weeks per zone. Like zone 9 would go 2 weeks further, zone 7 would go 2 weeks
earlier.
So,
and right. If you're growing the plants that get from Dixondale, a little hint there, they usually don't start shipping to December, but if you call them and tell them you want onions in November, they can a lot of times
tell them the Hoss Boys told you to do that.
All right.
Number 2 from Brian
Figueroa.
Curious question, considering the elephant garlic, should the seed be cold chilled or stratified for 8 to 10 weeks before planting?
Okay, so traditional garlic, hard net garlic and soft net garlic, for it to stratify or make a bulb, it has to go through this process called vernalization. Okay. And that means it's subjected to really cold temperatures. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people that are trying to grow hardneck and softneck garlic down here, because the soils, our temperatures outside are never going to get there, they'll put it in the fridge for an extended period of time before they plant it to subject it to the cold temps to vernalize it, sort of stratify. With the elephant garlic, you don't have to do that. We've never done that with elephant garlic. It always makes a nice clove. Elephant garlic is actually a leek, not a garlic, which could probably be why that is. So no, I would say no, you don't have to worry about doing that. It does just fine whether we get any really cold winters or not.
All right.
Question number three is from a fellow, or could be a woman, Trammell is her name, and just says, what size are your plots there?
In my garden, I got probably three different sizes of plots out there. I got a couple that's 40 by 60. I got a couple, maybe three or four, that's 30 by 40. And I got a couple smaller ones that's like 20 by 15. So I have three different size plots out there. And I use the three different sizes for different, like watermelons, for example, or corn. I need a bigger size plot for those. For some of my cut flowers that I'm doing succession plantings with, the 20 by 15 plot is plenty big enough. So I have different sizes, three or four different sizes. I think there's three different sizes out there. Some of them are decent size and some of them are a lot smaller. And what I find myself is I like those smaller plots because it kind of keeps me from planting too much sometimes.
And I would say they all average somewhere between 1,000 and 1,500 square feet probably.
Yeah, somewhere in there, yeah.
Okay.
All right, number four is from Thanief. I am in trouble, man.
I don't know how you say that.
When are y'all planting your English peas and sugar snaps?
So this is kind of like I was mentioning earlier. As soon as I can get a break in these temperatures, I got me a spot laid out. I'm going to plant me some English peas. But as soon as these, I can see in the forecast where there's no 90 degree days left, I'm going to plant me some English peas in the fall. It's one of those risky things like the pole beans. Sometimes it'll come off, sometimes it don't. But when it does, man, it is sure enough reward. So if things happen like I think they will, and the 90 degrees days break here in a minute, but yet the temperatures stay fairly warm and we get a late frost like I think we're going to get, I should be just fine. You going to plant any English peas?
I am. I love me some English peas.
All right, question number five is from W.L. Kaplinger, and he wants to know, does the garlic have any pests that causes any problems?
I'm sure they probably do in certain locations of the country, and I can tell you only what experience I've had. I have never had to spray my elephant garlic.
Or onions.
Now, I have had, sometimes in the springtime, I've had a little bit of an aphid problem get down there at the bottom where the green starts. But I don't know if I've ever treated it. It's kind of took care of itself. So if you do get some hot weather early on in the spring, you're apt to have a little bit of an aphid problem, but it normally corrects itself and takes it. You know, the populations are not that bad. It causes tremendous damage. So I can't remember ever treating elephant garlic or my onions with a pesticide.
For the most part, alliums, even though we live in a very high disease or pest area, alliums are one of those things we don't ever have to spray.
Yeah. All right. And Mr. Larry Goddard says, approximately how many plantable cloves of the elephant garlic per pound? About how much would I need for a 30-foot row at 8-inch spacings? Do you plant on double rows?
All right, Mr. Larry, so we're gonna do a live counting here. So I've got a bag of elephant garlic. I'm gonna hand these to you, you hold them. So we're gonna go through and count the cloves. One, and those are nice big old cloves there. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, that's a monster there, eight, nine, ten, 11, 12, 13, drop one, 14, 15. So that pound had 15 in it. It will vary a little bit depending on how big the cloves are. We say on the website 8 to 12. We always like to give everybody a little extra. So you can just say, I'd say on average, about 10 to 12 cloves per pound. And you want to know how many you need to do a 30-foot row at 8-inch spacing. Based on my math, you need about 45 cloves to do that on 8-inch spacing, a 30-foot row. I would say 5 pounds would be plenty enough for you there. And yes, I will plant mine on double rows. A little more on that coming in a later question. All right. Question number 7 from Mike Hall. He says, can you plant shallots using your dibble wheel?
Absolutely, and that's what I did last year, and that's what I'll do again this year. My soil is so dry.
You get in trouble saying dirt.
I get in trouble. My soil is so dry right now that the dibbles won't work in there. So I'll have to either wait till I get some moisture in my soil.
Or wet it
so that it'll hold when these dibbles. Now, if you got some moisture in there, when you put that dibble down in there, it's going to hold that size of the dibble there, and it is perfect.
Or if you got denser soil, not sandy.
Yeah, it is perfect for planting elephant garlic and shallots. So that's the way I do it. I use this baby right here.
So we'll turn all these dibbles out to give us about a 4 or 6 inch space
in there.
It's
more like a 6 inch, yeah.
if you measure at the top here. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to lay my drip tape, then I'm going to take my rake, and I'm going to level out where that drip tape was buried, and I'm going to wet it down a little bit. Then I'm going to come through there with the dibble wheel, poke them nice little holes. Now, it wouldn't work for elephant garlic because you want it a little deeper. You really need to make a trench with the plow set for that.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
But for onion sets, onion transplants, and the shallots, dibble wheel work like a dream.
Mr. Gerald White wants to know, will any mustard plant kill root knot nematodes?
Yes, Gerald. Pretty much any mustard will release those glucosinolates, which is going to help kill the nematodes. However, certain mustards work better than others. And typically, the spicier the mustard is, the better it's going to work. We use and we sell the Florida broadleaf just because that's kind of the most popular out there. And it's not so spicy that you can't eat it. You can actually eat it. If you do a little online research, you'll find there are some varieties that people use strictly for the fumigation process. There's one called Caliente, which, you know,
it's supposed to be the best one.
Yeah, and it's the hottest out there. I don't imagine it would be worth the poot to eat.
Yeah.
But it's supposed to, you know, really release those chemicals. So yeah, you can use any mustard. The hotter, the better. All right, question number 9 here is from the Max Happy Homestead, and they say, when you cut your cover crops in, how do you know it won't come back? Do you tarp it so it won't go to seed and come back?
The cover crops that we sell, the only ones you got to be really concerned about reseeding and becoming invasive is buckwheat. Buckwheat's notorious for seeding early on and being a little bit on the invasive side. So the only one that I would really be concerned about that would be the buckwheat. That being said, when it blooms, now I got some buckwheat planted now, and I was out there yesterday, and I noticed I had some honeybees in there on my buckwheat, and they was working it pretty good. So I like to let it bloom, but when it starts bloom, after it's been blooming for about 3 weeks, then I start thinking about turning it in, because you don't want it to go to seed and those seeds to mature on the plant. Now, mustard can go to seed and become a problem. It's a lot longer process there, and it's normally not an issue. Sun hemp's not an issue as far as reseeding. So buckwheat's the only one you got to be concerned about. Cut it in after it gets through flowering, before it starts putting those seed pods on and letting them mature. So there you go.
Yeah, and I would add on the sun hemp and buckwheat, things I've noticed this year, they're not going to go to seed unless they get really tall or get really stressed and gets hot. And I'll probably do a video on this show. The sorghum and sun hemp. The sorghum, you can just keep mowing it and mowing it and mowing it, and it will do fine. Sun hemp, you can mow it a little bit, but once you crimp that sun hemp and break that kind of woody stalk, it's pretty much done. Sorghum will stand back up after you crimp it if you don't tarp it, but it tills in really, really easily. So does the millet.
Sun hemp won't go to seed near as quick as buckwheat will.
So yeah, right.
It's a long-term process for it to go to seed and to make a viable seed, so it's normally not an issue with those.
Yeah, so not a whole lot to worry about there. All right.
Let's see here. Mr. David Reach says, could you put some animals in there to eat the cover crops down? That's a good
certainly,
one.
Certainly. And I did a video on this a couple years ago. I used to have chickens and a chicken tractor and the little mobile electric fence. I grew some clover, turned the chickens in there on it, and it worked like a dream. Now, I've got a little bit of a predator problem, so I don't have chickens anymore. But if you've got goats, you've got chickens, or I would say even hogs.
Cows.
And you've got a way to move them and shift them around. Yeah, grow a cover crop and let the animals go in there. That's probably the best way. And you're going to get a little cultivation there as well. So.
Yeah, sun hemp is actually a great forage for goats and cattle.
I didn't know that until a fellow told me the other day. Evidently, the goat people love the sun hemp.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, question number 11 is from Lee and John S. And this says, are you using any nitrogen-fixing inoculants with your cover crops?
Yes and no. If you've got a situation where you've been planting things, peas and stuff there for a period of time, you don't need to put any inoculants on there because that beneficial bacteria is present in your soil. So if I'm planting peas or anything for that matter in my garden, I don't worry about it because I know there's beneficial bacteria are there because I've been growing those legumes there for a long time. However, the clover that we sell is coated with an inoculant. So you don't have to worry about with our crimson clover because you're getting that inoculant on it regardless. If I'm planting in a virgin spot that's maybe had grass on it for years and years or an issue or a situation like that, and I was using a legume, I would possibly look at adding the inoculant, but that would be the only situation.
And we could in the future, I've looked at it, add some of those inoculants to our site. There's three or four of them and they're cover crop specific. You have to use a certain one with a certain cover crop.
And if you've ever tried to use some of those powdery inoculants on some of the stuff, it is absolutely a nightmare to try to get it in there. There's several different methods the way you apply it to the seed and put it out, but it's nasty and it's aggravating. And that's one reason with our clover, we're so proud to have it with the coated with inoculants, so you don't have to worry about all that.
That's right, that's right.
All right, so Mr. Rosenberger W, are you doing all of your alliums double row on either side of the drip tape? What space in between rows for garlic, shallots, and onions?
Okay, so I did another drawing here for y'all. And this looks like a road map, but it's not. So this kind of explains. I'm doing one big plot with all my alliums in that plot. I'm gonna plant my onions in there, my shallots in there, my leeks in there, and my elephant garlic, and I'll do them all on the same row spacing. So here we go. So the dotted line there is my drip tape. Why don't you hold it up?
Let me hold it.
Okay. The dotted lines are my drip tape. The solid lines on each side are my rows of plants. So that's a double row, that's a double row, that's a double row, that's a double row, and so forth. And I'll probably have 10 or 12 of these. On the double rows, I plant about 3 to 4 inches on each side of the tape. So you can basically say each row here within the double rows is about 8 inches apart. The actual whole double rows itself, or the drip tape itself, I lay about 2 foot apart. And I've played with this and it works really good. So when the plants are young, and I've got that single wheel hoe with the cultivator teeth on them. I got about an 8-inch path of cultivation with those three teeth on the single wheel hoe. I make 2 passes, boom, knock it out between the rows. And then once everything gets a little bigger, it works just right to make 1 pass down there. So I've got it broken down on how many passes I make with the wheel hoe. So I do my drip tape 2 feet apart. I should have extended that line right there. So 2 feet apart on the tape, and then 3 to 4 inches on each side of the tape. Works like a dream. Do that with onions, garlic, shallots, leeks, all of them.
Now, I'm not going to plant mine on double rows. I'm going to plant mine on single rows. I'm going to lay drip tape down. I'm going to plant mine on single rows, and here's the reason why. I have more weed pressure in my garden than he has in his. And if you have a high weed pressure.
And why is that?
Well, my garden's been there longer.
Yeah?
It's been there longer.
Yeah, I do a little bit better job of keeping up
with
the
weeds. Well, whatever. Anyway, I got a little bit more serious problem out there. And it's easy, if you have a high weed pressure area, it is easier to weed on a single row with onions and garlic. If you do not have that high weed pressure, you can certainly do more intensive gardening and grow more on smaller areas with the double row.
Speaking of weed pressure, and I haven't made up my mind completely, but I'm leaning toward it heavily. Once all my alliums get established a little bit, get some greenery on them, 6 or 7 inches of vegetation, I've got plenty of wheat straw left over from the spring. I'm thinking about going in and putting some wheat straw on mine, double rows there, trying that.
See how it works.
See how it works.
Let's do a giveaway.
Let's do a giveaway. So we had 12 questions, and we got 12 numbers in this hat here. So close your eyes and you pick one there, and whoever it is, we're going to give them a hat.
We're going to give them a red hat. Number two.
Number two. So who was that? Brian Figueroa. So Brian, send us your address to custserve@hosstools.com, and we'll send you this little brand new, nice
red hat
right here. Thank you everybody for participating. As always, put all your questions in the comments, because every month or so we like doing these rapid fire Q&A shows, and you never know when your question might get on the show and you could always win something cool. If y'all live in an area similar to us, I hope everybody gets some rain soon. Hope the temperature breaks soon. Don't give up with those gardens. Keep plugging along and you'll be all right.
Time for me to get back in them garlic pickles.
That's right. See you guys next week.
Later.